Well, hello again, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Bible is Funny podcast. My name is Anthony Russo. Here on the Bible is Funny podcast, we talk about the funniest parts of the Bible and what we can learn from them. Today, very, very special day. We are recording our first live podcast with a guest. So my wife, Rachel, I always like to give you updates, is here at the table with our special guest.
Is she at the table, though?
She's near. She's around. She's at the other end
she's
of the table.
She's at the other end of the table.
She's at the other end of the table. This honestly hurts my feelings a little, because when I record, she's like off on the couch, like not as interested in what's about to happen. But when you're here, she wants to sit at the table and be right in the middle of it. The boys are asleep. And this is, while this is a special thing, this is also kind of a very normal thing, mm-hmm. because our guest today is our neighbor, Jessica.
Hello.
Jessica, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Jessica is at our house nearly every day, and we are at her house nearly every day.
Multiple times a day.
We live. Like, I felt like one of the ways I was, like, going to introduce Jess is, like, Jess is my neighbor. But I feel like, because we're all Christians, we're like, oh, neighbor, yeah. Yeah, neighbor. Love that. Like, no, she's my real neighbor, though. Like, she lives two doors down from me.
This literally.
Like actual neighbor.
I'm type. Your wife's sister wife.
This is
slash
my situation.
You are my husband's brother husband.
You guys have such a unique friendship. Like your group of friends. To have friends that you've been friends with for like since you were. I was just thinking about that the other day. Like my first time I start picking up friends is like middle school. For real. For real.
Yeah.
And you guys are like preschool buddies.
Forever.
It's wild.
If Rachel was closer, she would be...
Rachel, please continue to not...
No, stay at the other end of the table, please.
While we talk about
yes,
it.
We've been friends for forever, and it's weird slash amazing slash I actually grew up down the street from your wife.
Right.
Our parents lived a couple streets away, and we did not plan to live on the same street, but we're here now, so...
Right.
It's amazing that our kids get to experience the same thing, so that's...
Our kids are best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Foxy and Crosby.
Very into Star Wars right now.
Very into Star Wars.
Everything is just lightsabers, Luke Skywalker. We are in it.
I won't stay here too long, but one of my favorite Foxy is like my, as much as we all joke, Foxy is like my, I feel like my other kid as well, because I love him so much, because we spend so much time together. Watching him transform into a dinosaur is one of my favorite things, because people are like, oh, I get it. He acts like a dinosaur. Like, it's a transformation.
I'm convinced it's a coping skill. Like, he gets overwhelmed and overstimulated, and he turns into a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Specifically, and I know it's that because his arms come up really short.
His arms are short, right.
And he kind of, like, bends over and starts to just, like, sprint. And so when that happens, we know, wrap it up, get in the car, it's time to go home. He's had enough.
Almost like that old book series, Animorphs.
Yes.
Do you remember that? Where the cover
where they're
of the book,
slowly they're transitioning. Slowly,
that's Foxy. Like, so the arms creep up. The walk starts to get long.
The screech. Like,
he starts to screech. He's becoming the dinosaur.
It's time to go.
So many memories that I won't go back through all of them. But we've all known each other for so long. We were talking just before the podcast started. We went to homecoming together.
We did.
We should have both been best dressed at that homecoming. But
I got best dressed.
You were best
I was
dressed.
Awarded. I went home with a trophy.
I did not go to the school. Therefore, the whole voting system was rigged. But if we would go back in time, I think I would have got best dressed too.
It's a sore spot.
I won you a goldfish at a carnival.
You did.
Which was a big deal. And I brought it to your house. And I don't know that the fish made it all the way in the house, but I brought it to the house, you know.
And my dad promptly said, get that fish out of here. So, not big on pets in our home. I don't know why.
You had the lizard. I thought maybe...
Iguanas, yes. We draw the line at goldfish.
Goldfish. Those are gross. So many fun memories. But let's fast forward some. You now are a licensed therapist?
Licensed mental health counselor, yes.
Okay.
Therapist.
You have your own practice.
I do. I spent quite a few years in community mental health, working with a lot of addictions, co-occurring disorders, And eventually I had a different idea of, you know, how I wanted to treat my clients, how their experience would be when they come to therapy, and just kind of took the leap. And now I'm have my private practice, and I'm just kind of like honing in on just more so what I feel like is important, what I would have wanted. Cause you know, I went to therapy. Side note, never trust a therapist that hasn't been to therapy. Like there's some personal work that has to be done, you know, if you're going to be working with other people. Yeah. And so when, based on my experiences with therapy and working within community mental health, I was just like, you know, there's some good, there's some not so great. And you know, what do I want to be to my clients? What do I want to provide? What do I want to create for them? And so that's what kind of shoved me out. And I was just like, all right, let's go, sink or swim. And so, yeah, I've been in private practice for about 2 years now, maybe.
That's awesome.
Half. Yeah, this, it's all a blur after this last 2020 half a year.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. The 10 years that have already been this half of a 2020 year. That's awesome. Yeah. I tell the story. I was debating about even telling the story now, but I tell the story about you that I will put on the spot of you right now, to take a dramatic turn on the Bible's Funny podcast. We both lost our dads at a younger age. Yeah. And you, when I lost my dad, you came in my office at work and you said the most meaningful single thing that anyone said to me during that time,
which what was, what did I say?
Which was, we're both Harry Potter fans. And you said, I just want, what is that creature called? The Nurgles? That's not right.
Oh, Thestrals. The Thestrals,
you said,
yes.
When you Thestrals. Lose someone, your parent that's that close to you, it's you can see the Thestrals. And people that haven't lost someone that close to them, they can't. And so I just want you to know that I can see the Thestrals too.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yes.
You said, you said.
Oh, I said it. I am so sweet.
You deserve that pat on your
I was gap. Saying that's sweet, that what you're saying,
yes,
it
no.
touches my heart because I know it's actually my dad's birthday today, weirdly enough. So he's been on my mind a lot. And I thought, like, J.K. Rowling has been in some heat lately. She's saying some very controversial things lately. Mm. But I think when you read those books, and I do work with a lot of teens, and so sometimes it gets brought up in sessions, like, she knows grief. Like, say what you will about her, she knows grief. And I think the way that she describes grief, both in the Thestrals and with the Dementors and like things like that with depression, it's spot on.
Yeah.
So that was like, I could never describe what it felt like. Because when you lose a dad this young, it's like, there's not a lot of people that have experienced losing a parent yet. And so her description was like, that's it. That's just, you see the Thestrals. Like, they're there.
Yeah. This thing that is, you realize all of a sudden that it's everywhere and it has been everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like became a real thing to you so quickly. Like,
your reality.
Super, it was very well articulated by J.K. Rowling. And it was so sweet that you said it.
Sweet.
Jessica on Jessica. So sweet. So what we're going to talk about today, this is what we do on the podcast. We talk about a Bible story, and we kind of break it down. And that's why I thought you'd be perfect, what we just set up with. Before we go further, though, hold the phone. I don't want to get too far before we forget. I forgot a huge qualifier. You are a Kroger micro influencer.
Kroger? Wait, are we in like Georgia right now?
What is it?
Okay. Nice.
Aldi.
Aldi.
You're an Aldi. You're a Piggly Wiggly micro influencer.
Listen.
An Aldi micro influencer.
I actually just realized I'm not yet a micro influencer. I'm known as a nano influencer. Which is embarrassing.
That's
but
the smallest,
you know,
iPod they made.
It's just teeny tiny, no screen, just a circle. You don't know if you're hitting fast forward or stop. I'm a nano influencer.
The micro iPod is a nano influencer.
I appreciate Aldi. I I love that you can go in and get a ham and a blow up like wacky cacti for your backyard so your kids can play around. So I want to share that with the other.
Right.
All the lovers of the world. So yeah. I'm working my way up to micro. I'm at nano, but right. I've accepted it and I'm almost there. So
you know what? I still think you're a micro influencer. I don't care what they try to say you are.
I'll be there.
I can't believe I said Kroger.
Kroger.
That's so wrong. Aldi micro influencer. Do you want to shout out the account or is it, do you want to stay anonymous? I think it's an anonymous account right now, right?
Well, it's an anonymous Aldi account. So okay. If you happen to see an Aldi anonymous account, then
okay.
I can't confirm or deny whether or not you found it, but it's out there.
And that's marketing 101 right there. Be as vague and as anonymous right. as you can. And that's how you get
We're
all
out
the way
there.
to the final form of influencer. Okay, so the story we're going to cover today. We are going to cover the story of Joseph today. Because I had this written down as a thought. It's just something in the story of Joseph that I had not noticed the first couple times I was introduced to it. And when I was reading through the Bible for this project, this set of verses jumped out at me. And I just noted it as strange. So we're going to go through that quickly. Story of Joseph takes place. We're going to cover Genesis chapter 42 through Genesis chapter 45. We're not going to read all of it. But the story of Joseph is all throughout. It actually starts before that, but that's the part we're going to cover. Some quick backstory. So what happens is Joseph is one of, oh boy, I have to have this down better. One of 11 brothers, I want to say, or he has 11 brothers. There's 12 tribes of Israel, so I think he's one of 11.
One of 12, I think.
So he has all these brothers. He gets from his dad, he gets this coat of many colors. Have you ever seen Joseph in the Technicolor dream coat? That's where this story comes from. He's like the kind of like the chosen one. He has these dreams and all these things. So then he goes through this process where his brothers, he goes out to check on his brothers throw him and they in this well, they end up selling him into slavery in Egypt. He goes through all these situations in Egypt. He's in prison for a time. He comes out. And he becomes the second most powerful man in Egypt through a set of circumstances that is a lot more interesting than how I'm fast-forwarding through it right now. The story of Joseph is great, and you should read it. But I want to let you know a little bit going up to this. He went from, you know, at this time, like the whole people of the Israelites is not an incredibly large amount of people. They're not a huge nation yet. And he is one of Jacob's sons. I should have done a lot. I should have been more prepped on this backstory as I led into this. So please bear with me. So then he is the second most powerful person in Egypt. And his brothers, who sold him into slavery to begin with, they run out of food where they're living because there's a famine. And they come to see him. And that's where our story picks up. So, chapter 42, let's start in 22. Again, I really just want you to see Joseph's response here. Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you," this is chapter 42, verse 22. Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy, but you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood." They did not realize that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. Verse 24, he turned away from them and began to weep, but then came back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. So that's instance number one, Jess.
Mm-hmm.
Starts in chapter 42. Chapter 43. Story continues on. And we'll just go right to verse 30. Deeply moved. Chapter 43, verse 30. Deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. After he had washed his face, he came out and controlling himself said, "Serve the food." Just kind of, that's a funny scene right there in and of itself. Everyone waiting to eat and he comes back out.
Serve the food, quick.
Disheveled.
I've been there. The first one, was he, I was like scanning this. If this is honesty hour, I did a quick scan.
It's always honesty hour.
I saw that he was in disguise or some sort of like,
yeah.
disguise at that point.
So he's like, at this point in the story, he has taken on the idea of being an Egyptian. Like, he's been giving an Egyptian name, an Egyptian okay. wife. And so it's really interesting you say that, because, like, aesthetically, there's such a huge difference. If you've ever seen pictures of, like, mm-hmm. ancient Egypt, they're like, they were very against hair. So a lot of times everybody's, like, very, very bald. And then the, like, eyeliner.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not saying, like, you know, bank on all that as actual fact. But, like, that's kind of the aesthetic of the Egyptians.
Right.
And would be super jarring if you are, again,
not into eyeliner. And fully shaving everything you've got.
Yes. So the last time you saw him, right, you have this, like, shepherd people, which mm-hmm. is what the Israelites were at this point, who had, like, long hair, would wear, like, hairy robes and things like that. There's even an allusion later that the Egyptians thought particularly the Israelites were, like, gross, and mm-hmm. they thought shepherding was gross. So there would have been, like, a visual,
stark difference.
Yeah, they would not have.
So when I was reading this, my mind went to Undercover Boss. In that, are we sure the brothers couldn't tell it was him? Like, how good was the disguise?
Right.
Was it SNL?
Right.
Because our kids are into Darth Vader and all of that. Right. Like, was it a Kylo Ren situation where they all know that it's Joseph or not? Like, how good was this disguise?
Yeah.
I just don't.
That's a really good... I would think another question in there is, are you sort of, like, haunted by the idea of Joseph, right?
Right.
So, like, you sold him.
Yeah.
And then do you sort of see him, like, everywhere for a while?
Like,
and you're like,
is there guilt there?
Right.
Have you seen him before this?
Yeah. Like... So that maybe even, like, he has the same eyes and stuff, but you don't see it anymore because you keep talking yourself out of, like, no, it's not Joseph.
Like, the interpreter is there, but it's like, could you tell, like... Wait a second. Is that no?
Right.
We don't talk about that anymore.
Right.
Like
right.
we've moved on. Like that was my first. As I was like glancing through, I was like, "How good was this disguise? Was he crying some of the disguise off? Did he have to go like put it back on? What's going on?"
Great question. Great question with the eyeliner. And I think that was noted, right? In the first or the second one? When he washed his face.
I know when I first started wearing eyeliner, it was a mess and.
In chapter
NYC, shout out.
In chapter 43, verse 31, it's definitely noted. After he had washed his face,
right.
he came out.
And the eyeliner is dripping at this point. I'm telling you, as a woman, this is happening.
Nothing to catch it. It's just streaking. After he'd washed his face, he came out and controlling himself said, serve the food. That's a great point, though. Yeah, I'd never thought about that. And that's so good. I also love the idea that, like, he could understand them and they, even though there was, like, an interpreter involved.
Right.
And I also, like, kind of wonder, like, the poor interpreter. Like,
oh,
what,
my gosh.
He's useless.
Yeah.
Like, he thinks he's doing such an important job, and yet Joseph is like, I don't even...
I can understand.
I literally been trying to fire this guy for so long, but I can't do it. Okay, so there's another point even. Verse 45, or chapter 45. Genesis chapter 45. This is kind of like the end of the story. So, again, this is such a great story. But the brothers come, and Joseph kind of puts them through the ringer a little bit as far as, like, testing them to see if they've changed from their ways. And this is the end of that, and it's chapter 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. Verse 2. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it.
He's scream crying.
Like, that's a lot.
That's what I would diagnose as a scream cry.
That's got to be. That's got to be. I mean, to... And again, you can't, but you're, when you put yourself there, you're thinking, like, we're talking like a castle, right? We're not talking like the house we're in right now,
no.
where the other room is super close. Like, and then if you're the brothers, I think there's got to be that immediate, like, is this
what
good
do you do?
News or bad news? Like, if you're crying like that, that would be concerning, I would think, if you were them. And I love verse 2. This is something I've loved. This is the first time I pulled this part out. the Egyptians heard him and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Because the vision to me is like, right or wrong, it's that like, it's like the person crying at work.
Yeah.
And you're all like,
yeah.
do we talk about, we all heard them crying.
For sure.
Do we
for
talk
sure.
about them crying? And then you say Pharaoh's household heard about it. Like, yeah, everyone's talking about it. Like,
everybody's talking about it at the water cooler. It's happening. We all know. We didn't have to be there. We saw it.
Joseph
we heard
was
it.
crying very loudly to those hairy shepherds.
I just, you know, sometimes you got to let it out.
Obviously. Obviously. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about today. So this is what jumps out at me. Joseph is this great character in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis. He's like a founding father of the faith, for sure. And then you have these like breakdown moments. Like the things that jumped out at me the most were how erratic it felt. Like the crying even. Like it's, you know, the first iteration in chapter 42. He turned away from them and began to weep and then came back and spoke to them again. So it's this like breaking down and putting it back together like really quickly.
Yeah.
Is that something that is common, do you think? What do you think that?
I think that, you know, in terms of like crying, like specifically men crying, it always interests me to hear like what, when you say erratic, like what about that story is erratic to you? Like, that's interesting to me that it's erratic from your perspective.
So like, I think about it like you want to like have a cry. Mm-hmm. So you like are like, all right, we're going to do this. We're going to cry.
Yeah.
And that's how like when I've cried, like that's you feel it coming and you're like, let it out. Like there's, we just got it. We can't stop it anymore.
I think the response of him, him running away is, that seems like fairly normal. Like in terms of the men that I see in my practice where it's like, okay, I started crying and I ran away and it's just kind of like, well, why are you running away? What's going on that you're running away? Is it because it's embarrassing? Is it, is it appropriate or is it inappropriate? You know, and with this story, you know, from a trauma lens, he's endured, I mean, being sold into slavery, like being removed from your family, like all of those things that are highly traumatic. And so when he's seeing his brothers, like he gets all this disguise, like you're the freaking like second in command. Right. Like, what are you hiding from?
Right.
But he's still hiding. Like that stood out to me as I was kind of reading it, because when you've experienced something like that, you can get kicked into like fight, flight, or freeze mode. Mm-hmm. Like to me, the disguise is like, I'm hiding, like I'm fleeing really at this point. Like I'm not ready to be myself with these people. Let me kind of test the waters. And when he starts to cry, that's that like, and run, like that's flee. Like that, when I'm reading this, this is like trauma response. And it's because like, you know, it's because I can't turn it off. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like
black
therapist during the pandemic and civil rights movement, you know, what I mean? It's just constant of, you know, how much of this is trauma versus, you know, political trauma, et cetera. And so as I was glancing through these verses, I'm like, oh my gosh, no wonder he's sobbing. Like he hasn't seen these people in how long was it? Like half a lifetime at this point.
Jessica,
he's now
if I
an
had
adult.
Done research before this podcast.
How old is he?
Like
Anthony.
I would be way more prepared to answer that question. Oh, that's so good though, because and I think about like the context of the story, right? So he has like started this life and he's been like really successful at it.
Right.
He's with this like new people group that has welcomed him, accepted him. He's super powerful. He's super successful. And then there's this like other part of his life that like
the old life,
the
like,
old life. Right.
I've moved on from that life.
Yeah. And that feels like very not out of touch. That feels like that happens still, right? Like people will be really successful in their business and they'll think like, well, I can just sort of bury myself in this because this is where I'm successful and I'm respected and everybody loves me. And then you have like this other thing you like haven't dealt with come in asking for corn. And now you all of a sudden have to like deal with this
and
situation.
It's impacting his present day. Like he can't ignore it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the type of thing that often leads people to therapy is I've experienced this horrific thing, or I think I've healed from this horrific thing and I'm living my life and maybe I'm even succeeding, but then something just kind of triggers that response in you. Mm-hmm. And it can be something as small as like a smell, you know, mm-hmm. like you watch a movie and some scene in the movie reminds you of this trauma you haven't dealt with. And then you start to kind of question like your ability to, you know, can I still run this business? Can I still do this job? Can I still give the grain to everybody? When I read a story like this, I'm wondering, you know, is he questioning himself? You know, is that what's going into this disguise? And let me test them. Like, let me do all these things to make sure I'm safe. And so that I think if you've experienced a trauma and you read this story, that you can kind of relate to that is you value safety. And I think he probably at that point started to feel safe and then it just gets wrecked.
Right.
And so to me, like that reaction is appropriate. Like you have held back for this long. You've done it, like good on you, but oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I have to deal with this now.
Right.
He can't just like not sob, you know?
Oh man. So then if you follow it in the order a little bit, so the first occurrence of it is, like I said, in chapter 42, and it's this like, he's there and he turns away from them and he weeps and he comes back and speaks to him again. And then 43, deeply moved at the sight of his brother, he hurries out and looks for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. So that, yeah, I guess, well, I'll go back to that in a minute. So he went to his private room and wept there. He washed his face. He comes back. And then it's almost like in 45, kind of what you're saying. He's like, okay,
yeah,
everybody out.
Yeah.
Now's the time. Like, I've been fighting this thing off. I've been just trying to decide if I feel that safety, like you're saying. Am mm-hmm. I safe enough to do this? And then 45, he's like,
I'm letting it go.
It's like, happening.
All of Egypt, everybody will hear this cry. This is it.
This is it. This is what I'm letting out right now. Yeah. And that's why, like, 43, to the question you asked earlier, when he says, like, he hurries out and looks for a place to weep. That's more like what I, when I said the first one was erratic. That mm-hmm. feels more to me like, okay, I need a minute. I'm going to go take my minute somewhere else.
And if you think about like when you're starting to, you know, first, second jobs, whatever, where it's like, you know, who am I as a leader? Like, who am I as mm-hmm. this? And for so many men, it's like, well, you can't let them see you sweat. You know, these like phrases that you grow up with hearing, like can't let them see you cry. And it's like, you know, yes and no. Like, is it an appropriate cry? Like, is it an appropriate time to sweat? And how many people just kind of experience like a big emotion and just cover it up? Like, it's okay. You know, and that's like, as a therapist, when people are coming in, I'm like, is this cry appropriate? Is it, you know, is there maybe a hormone imbalance? Is there something underlying there? Or if I look at this situation as a whole, like, is this an appropriate time to be crying? And so that's usually what I'll bounce off to somebody, especially the men in my office. Like, mm-hmm. you're saying you felt weak, but, you know, who says that that's a weak thing? Like, where does that come from? Where does that message come from? Who taught you that? Right. You know, can we start to challenge that or question some of those early messages? Because maybe you were just ready, you know, maybe mm-hmm. you wanted to just kind of release that emotion. Maybe it was a big deal. Like, that's an okay reason to cry. And let's start to challenge that, like, embarrassment or, you know, whatever other feeling comes up, like anger. You know, that's often when I'm working with teens, we'll say anger is SAD's bodyguard. So mm-hmm. anger is SAD's bodyguard. If you're angry, what else is going on? What's underneath that anger? Because, you know, some men will say, well, I started crying and then I punched a hole in the wall. Well, what, you know, you punched a hole in the wall. Like, is that normal? Like, if you say that to your friends, are they going to be like, oh yeah, I've been there, done that. You know, how many guys do you know that have punched a hole in the wall? Like
a handful.
Is that normal behavior? But it's just kind of accepted, you know?
Right.
Like, maybe you were sad.
Yeah.
Let's deal with that.
What a strange question, too. Like, as just in my circle growing up, you would have never asked that. You're just mad. And it's okay to be. It's almost, I would say in my, what I experienced in upbringing was, it was okay to be mad. It wasn't okay to be sad.
Right.
So maybe even in that dynamic, it was like, yeah, well, you can feel this one. And that's like, oh, it's okay. And it almost was like cool.
Like the hole in the wall is fine.
Right.
But the sobbing, oh my, like.
Right. Right.
I'm uncomfortable now.
Yeah. That's weird. I've never really even thought about that extensively. But even, and I think it's like, you know, I'm super light on the like media is responsible for everything idea. But a lot of like the what's held up, I know to me growing up, what was held up as like icons or like this is what you want to be like,
right,
would act a rat, would be mad. That was okay. Like, mm-hmm. Right? Superheroes, they get mad and they start wrecking stuff.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I don't want to see them go to the other room and cry. Like, that's not what I got out of characters.
Yeah.
That they were like expressing emotions in a healthy way. I did want to ask before we get too far though. So mm-hmm. when you go through like a filter of like an appropriate cry, like, or an appropriate, like what are some things you would factor in if you're trying to decide, is this inappropriate or is this?
Well, I mean, like is like, if we use this story as an example, him being years removed from these brothers, you know, living this life, dealing with trauma, stepping out of that and succeeding, you know, and then you're dealt this just out of, you know, he was probably, I would imagine he's shocked to see them. Mm-hmm. Like that, oh my goodness, they're like, did he know they were all still alive? Did he know his dad was alive at this point? You know, like, I'd think if I, you know, if you're removed from your family, do you just kind of try to act and assume, act as if they're dead? You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
right.
And then you're now dealing with, okay, here are my brothers in front of me. Is my dad alive? Like, I mean, we've experienced the loss of a dad. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine somebody coming to you and being like, oh my gosh, I think he's actually alive. Like,
right.
What do you do with that?
Right.
You cannot compute. So I think that, you know, for me, this story highlights something that's really important, which is to like trauma. Like to me, this is like a story of trauma. And what does that look like? How does that feel? It can be a shock. It can be just like a zap to the system. And then like, am I going to address it? Am I going to try to heal from it? Or am I going to avoid? Like, he had all the power at that point, right?
Right.
Back then, he had zero power. He's literally like, sold, you're done. They tried to kill him, right? Like,
that was
Rachel? Did you study?
Somebody researched this.
Who did the research?
Backstory.
So he went from zero power to now all the power, and he could have just demolished them.
Right.
Like, and he chose, you know, within this test, he's seeing there's been some sort of change here.
Right.
Can I be safe with these people? You know, can I trust them really? Mm-hmm. And so as he goes on in this and like, is my dad alive? Like what's going on? He's kind of being given a choice. Like, do I go on
right.
and kind of ignore this side? Do I heal from it? Do I try to move forward from it?
Yeah.
And I think that that's like, obviously as a therapist, that's what drives people into the office, especially men, where it's like, I cannot ignore this anymore.
Right.
Okay. Well, now what? Mm-hmm. You know, you can choose. Like, that's within your power. Do you shut it down?
Yeah.
Or do you try and heal, cope, whatever that looks like for you, and move forward? And so, like, that's what I saw, you know?
No, that's so great. And I think, like, a couple of things I'll do for house cleaning. He doesn't know his dad's alive. I do know that.
Okay.
I did research that. And by that, I mean, it's just right here. because that's like one of the first things he asks, chapter 45, verse 3. He says, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? So I think it furthers your point that that's definitely
That's
on
his
mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then also to just back up what you said, I mean, the power would have literally just been like, no, I'm not giving you food.
Yeah.
See you later.
Die.
Like that would have been it. That would have been the end of the conversation and mm-hmm. nobody would have batted an eye. Like,
yeah.
It would have been it. Super. That's so great. And I think so many of the people I've talked to, like, they're when they go through like where they can't not do it anymore, the thing you were describing, I can't mm-hmm. not deal with this anymore. It's so they haven't looked at their recent experiences or their life experiences and said, mm-hmm. this is an appropriate thing. I just love how you phrased that and worded it. Because it's like, do this math. Like, you should be, how have you not been crying this whole time? Like you
should have
been
okay.
breaking down. And I think even like right now, like, you don't even need an excuse beyond like 2020. You whoever's breaking down crying daily,
go ahead.
You are.
You scream cry it out.
Scream cry. Just jot down 2020 on your list of appropriate reasons because there's so much going on. But yeah, I've encountered that a ton. People that are like, I just don't know why I'm feeling this way. And just being a friend of theirs,
we
you're
are
like,
collectively experiencing like a social trauma. Like this 2020 is traumatic, period, point blank, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, like this is some sort of trauma to you. Mm-hmm. And so that feeling of like heaviness and why am I so tired? Why am I so disorganized? I can't really, you know, the life as we know it is not the same anymore. Like this is our, like, you know, we can't go to the grocery store and not breathe freely.
Right.
Like that is traumatic for some people.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, all things considered, if you want to cry, like, please cry, like go ahead and go ahead and let yourself, like allow yourself. It is appropriate. It, I mean, I watched Stepmom, what is it? Stepmother? Stepmom? Oh my word. Like I just felt like I had a lot of tears to be shed. And I put on Stepmom and that movie demolishes me every single time. And because I had to just get it out.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good at first, but maybe in 30 minutes after it's like, okay, like it's that release. Like I've emotionally spent. I know it. I'm going to cry and then I'm going to kind of see what can I control in this and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's like, that's what Joseph did. It's like realizing I have some power here. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it, as evidenced by scream, crying, sobbing, hiding, like all of these things. But okay, what can I control? What do I want to move forward with? Okay. And making that decision.
Yeah.
Like that's, like we all have that power. Like there's gonna be things that we cannot control right now in 2020, but there's at least something that you can, and it's okay to like move forward within that. Like good on you, cry it out, let's keep it moving.
Right. Throw on Stepmom. I love that. And I love what you're saying too. Like that is the way forward. So Joseph is essentially faced with two ways forward. And the one, I have all the power. You guys treated me very, very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
My way forward is you can go die now.
Yeah.
Like that's it. Way forward. And to take the longer route, the route where he does behave like he doesn't have the power in the situation, that is the way forward. So that's kind of like the thought I would say I would want to leave with everybody with today as you're listening to this. I mean, embracing it, addressing it, like experiencing the emotion that you're experiencing, that is the way forward.
Right.
It might feel like if I just put that down, I can move forward. And that's counterintuitive. Like you might get a couple steps and then you'll wait till that thing comes back again. The actual way forward is to put on Stepmom and scream cry. That's the one thing
it's
you take
very
away
effective
from this podcast. It is. I don't think I've said it on this podcast. I mean, for me, it's the first 5 minutes of Up. I don't know if you've seen the first 5 minutes of Up.
Yes,
it doesn't
I have.
Matter when. It doesn't matter where. Mm-hmm. I honestly only need a scene at this point.
Yeah, because like, you know where it's going.
I gotta go. It's all gonna happen. And it's like I heard someone else point this scene out specifically, and it's like there's a scene where the wife is getting older, and she starts like walking up, and she falls.
Yes.
And she gets, I'm going to do it right now. Like, it is devastating. So, if you don't want Stepmom, if you want an animated feature.
If you need Up, go for it.
Do Up. Jess, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. What's for dinner tomorrow?
What?
I'm going to be here again.
We'll definitely be cooking. I think, if anything, we know that I will for sure be cooking. We'll eat something. You know we will. It'll be something that you've had in your fridge and we have in our fridge.
And we
comes
combine
together. That's my favorite, is that text. I have cucumbers and feta cheese.
Yeah, it's what like it's like Top Chef. Like, what are we going to create tonight? I don't want to go to the store. Let's make it happen.
Aaron starts to grill, and we just start putting stuff on it. And then we eat. Thank you so much, Jess. And thank you guys all for listening. If you have not subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, reach out to us. You can follow along with The Bible Is Funny on Instagram, @TheBibleIsFunny. Send me a message there. I love hearing from you guys. And we will see you again very soon. Oh, wait. Don't tune out yet. Jess is still here. I'm still here. We didn't leave. Jess, where can everybody follow you on social media besides your anonymous?
I can't disclose where the anonymous account is about Aldi, but I can say if you're into therapy stuff and want to keep in touch, at Golfside Counseling. I don't post frequently, but hey, I post and that's all that matters. So come along and I'd love to hear from you.
At Golfside Counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at The Bible Is Funny. And Rachel is at The Dining Room Table.
At the other end. Like, let her come closer. What's wrong with you?
We look like we are a very rich family that eats dinner very far away from each other. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back soon.